and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Good Monday evening. Welcome to another edition of the Local Edition, news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole, and we have a newsy program for you today. New York State Health Commissioner Dr. Mary Bassett on the potential resurgence of COVID as we head into the new school year. And how does the new National 988 Crisis Lifeline work in our area? What's the latest on housing issues? John Little, Sullivan County Commissioner for Health and Human Services, joins us for a deep dive on both of these topics in our weekly Sullivan County update. But first, it's our weekly check-in with the Sullivan County Democrat for the latest news. Patricio Rubio spoke to managing editor Joseph Abraham just earlier today to get the latest.
The big story is we have an update in the town of Mammocating. On May 31st, Mammocating Highway Superintendent Robert Huffcutt was arrested on two counts of sexual misconduct with a child stemming from approximately 20 years ago. Since the news has come out, he is an elected official, so there have been members of the public who've been saying he should resign or take a leave of absence. And recently, the town board decided that Councilman Thomas Morrow would step into the role of deputy highway superintendent, because in the meantime, it had been done by Joanne Salmo. And I guess after he heard that, he reached out, and he's been in touch with our Mammocating reporter, Samantha Montagna, who spoke to him and the town supervisor in Mammocating, Mike Robbins, because Huffcutt claims that he wants to come back to work, and that in addition to that, everything he says are accusations at this point, and he has civil rights, and that he's innocent until proven guilty, but said he felt, quote, like he was being crucified, because people think the accusations are true. So Samantha has an entire story kind of going back and forth between him and the town about, their sides of the story. And it's something that we will obviously continue to be, watching going forward.
In Samantha's story, does she mention or does he talk about the pay? Because I remember when he was first arrested and taken to jail, that he was on paid leave, and there were some people upset that he was still getting paid while dealing with this. Is he still on the payroll in the town of Mammocating?
Yeah, he said that he doesn't want to take a leave of absence because he wants to do the job he's currently getting paid to do. So he said that he didn't want to sit home and collect the paycheck, and the taxpayers deserve the person that they voted for to do the job. That's what he told our reporter. Currently he is getting paid, which I think is partially why, also in addition to those who believe the accusations at this point, or the charges, I should say, those that believe it are true, another reason why they want him to step away is because of the financial of the situation as well. It seems like a really tricky situation for all parties, and one that's going to have to play out, I think, over time. So,
yeah, and I'm sure you'll keep us up to date on what's happening there in the town of Mammocating. Joe, what else is happening in the pages of the Sullivan County Democrat that's coming out tomorrow?
Yeah, and as far as other stuff going on in the paper, my legislature coverage this week, I'm not going to go too much into it because you recently had Laura Quigley on the Local Edition. I have something on the Move Sullivan, possible expansion and addition of two routes. Very short update. Apparently, the SUNY Sullivan promised scholarship that the legislature is funding, which gives a Sullivan County student who meets the eligibility requirements a free full year of study at Sullivan. It's been doing quite well, and they've received quite a nice response so far. We also have stories about two Rock Hill volunteer EMTs that recently saved someone's life who was ODing in ShopRite in Monticello. We have another piece. We've been covering the upcoming primaries that'll be later this month, and particularly the race for the 19th Congressional District come November on the Democratic side, because there's two people, Jamie Chaney, who we had a feature on Friday. Tomorrow we'll have a piece on Josh Riley. And they're both contending to try to see who will get the Democratic nomination to take on Mark Molinaro, the Dutchess County executive and Republican, seeking the position in November. And then also I had a piece on the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office. The sheriff was talking to the legislature last week. Everybody across the country, no matter what the industry is facing issues with finding employees and labor. And the sheriff's office, the jail specifically in this case, is not immune to that. And so they were talking about some of the challenges jail employees face and also some things he'd like to discuss in executive session with legislature about the collective bargaining contract that's being offered to collective to the jail employees. They're represented under the Civil Service Employees Association, whereas Road Patrol is by a different group, the Sullivan County Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, and both of those unions, as well as many others, are currently in ongoing negotiations with the county through collective bargaining. So he wants to discuss those issues with the legislature so they can maybe see about how they can mitigate what he calls a potentially very dire situation. So that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Yes, definitely. We need to keep an eye on that, especially if he calls it a dire situation. Joe, what else is going on?
Sure. So, you know, we have some teases about a photo for the Monster Run that a really great reporter photographer covered this past weekend, and a photo of that. And we also have a story on Nora Jones at Bethel Woods. We've had quite a bit of Bethel Woods coverage in our paper throughout the summer, and we will continue to have going forward. So that's what we have going in our life and our sports pages. And another thing people can look out for this Friday is the full Monster Run story and results, as well as a preview of the Sullivan County Democrat two-man Better Ball golf tournament, which draws out a lot of really cool area golfers every year to compete for bragging rights. So,
and this year's tournament, where is it being held?
It will be at the Villa Roma on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So next week, so we'll have a preview on Friday, and then next Tuesday, when I come on, next Monday, I should say, again, I'll be previewing probably who won the tournament and what people can expect. So,
I saw recently in the Sullivan County Democrat that the Villa Roma has a new hole-in-one marker. It has a nice little sort of a stone marker there that has the hole-in-one, what the par is, and the Sullivan County Democrat name. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we're the sponsor of it, but the Villa Roma did something really cool. They recently just replaced all of like the plastic signs for each hole and explaining with like these nice stone structures. And I believe each one has a different sponsor. So really neat.
Joe, is there anything else before we go?
Nope, I think that covers it for this week. You know, people can always check us out on our website, scdemocratonline.com, and, you know, to see what other stories are developing. I also will add just a quick plug that the county is holding a blood drive tomorrow in the legislative hearing room from, I believe it's 9 to 1:30, and walk-ins are welcome. There's a severe blood shortage across the country, and so if you have the time and the blood to give, it's a good cause.
Definitely, and that's happening tomorrow, you say, from 9 to 1?
Yep, 9 to 1:30, I believe.
9 to 1:30 at the Government Center. Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining us on the Local Edition. This was Joe Abraham, Managing Editor for the Sullivan County Democrat, letting us know what's happening in the pages of the Democrat is coming out tomorrow. Joe, we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
Okay, and thank you, Patricio and Joe, for that latest update from the Sullivan County Democrat. Let's turn to the New York State Public Radio Exchange for some state-level news. Several Cayuga Nation homes were demolished last week on the orders from the tribe's federally recognized leader. The family that once lived in one of those homes says it was an act of retaliation. WSKG's Megan Zeres reports.
Wanda John's son emerges from a half-demolished farmhouse in rural Seneca County. The family has been trying to salvage what few belongings they can. Things like rattles used in sacred ceremonies, old lacrosse trophies, and a favorite toy belonging to one of the grandchildren. John and her family have lived in the house for the past 2 years. The property also housed a makeshift longhouse where she and other tribe members held ceremonies and traditional language lessons. John says she had no warning before tribal police, hired security guards, and a demolition crew showed up to the house on Wednesday.
I got dragged out of my house. You know, I got bruises all over my arms. They slammed me down on my front porch. You know, I thought I was going to pass out. And then he put his foot on the back of my neck here.
Her bruises were visible several days after the incident. In a statement, the tribe's federally recognized representatives Clint Halftown and Sharon Leroy say John hadn't been paying rent. They say they demolished the house because it was vacant and an eyesore. Bear Clan Chief Sam George says that's not true.
We had the county attorney take the code people down there, and they said it was in immaculate shape before his destruction.
The chief was one of about 20 people at a protest Friday. He says Halftown has used these surprise demolitions as a means of retaliation against his critics. Halftown demolished a longhouse used by tribal members who opposed his leadership in 2020. In Ithaca, I'm Megan Zarez, WSKG News.
And finally, New York State news. Governor Kathy Hochul says masks will not be required in schools this year, but New York is stockpiling rapid tests and personal protective equipment in anticipation of yet another potential surge of COVID-19 as the fall gets closer. Karen DeWitt spoke with the state's health commissioner, Dr. Mary Bassett, who says the best protection for kids is to get vaccinated. Bassett also spoke about the current surge of the Omicron BA5 variant and how to navigate a largely unregulated environment.
This is a really great time before kids go back to school to get your child vaccinated. We still have much lower rates than I'd like to see, particularly in the 5 to 11-year-olds who are school going. We're below 40% of those children fully vaccinated. This will protect your child. It will protect other members of the family who might be more vulnerable to serious outcomes. And while you're going to check up on all those other vaccines, consider getting your kid vaccinated for COVID as well. We now have safe and effective vaccines for children 6 months and over.
It seems like this is just a summer where everybody who hasn't had COVID knows somebody who has it. What do you recommend right now? I know there's no state, you know, mask mandates. There's no social distancing requirements. Like, what should somebody who doesn't want to get this but doesn't want to completely curtail their lives, what is the sensible advice right now that we should be following?
Absolutely. Everyone needs to get vaccine and boosted. And, you know, if you haven't been boosted and you're 50 and over, you're entitled now to two boosters. Anybody over the age of 5 should get vaccinated. And if they haven't been boosted this year, they're eligible for their first boost. We're still waiting to hear about a newer formulation of the vaccine for the second boost for the younger age group. So vaccinations are really critical to the improved outcomes that we've all been seeing. You're right. We have higher rates of infection documented this summer than in either of the two previous summers, but we aren't seeing the impact that we saw in those dreadful first months of the what we call wave one in 2020. And that's in places where, you know, the rates are high, which is mostly downstate. There have been recommendations for public indoor masking. The New York City Health Commissioner recommended public indoor masking, and I always follow his advice when I'm in New York City. We also still recommend masks and require them on public transport and healthcare facilities. I think it's sort of a small price to pay wearing a mask in crowded situations.
What about grocery stores, the pharmacy? You think you should still
yes.
wear one?
I do. I should recommend to others what I do myself.
Should people who have not got the second booster shot, should they get one this month, or should they wait until fall when the one that more specifically addresses the Omicron variants comes out? What's the advice there?
Right. That's a really good question. And I guess it depends on what kind of risk. So I got my second booster because I was going to travel by air and train and so on. But I don't think it's unreasonable for people to wait to the fall if they feel that they've been doing a pretty good job at protecting themselves from infection. But we're getting more and more infectious variants. And just to reiterate, while the vaccination doesn't seem to do as well as we'd like at protecting people from infection, it is extremely effective in averting bad outcomes, including death. So get vaccinated and get all the shots that are recommended for you. We're all looking forward to a vaccine that is more tailored to the current variants that are circulating.
Thanks again to Karen DeWitt for that interview with New York State Health Commissioner Dr. Mary Bassett. This is the Local Edition. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sullivan County Commissioner of Health and Human Services John Little is with us.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's nearly time to blast off with the Retro Cocktail Hour. Daryl Brogdon here inviting you to drop in at the Underground Martini Bunker for classic tiki tunes, private eye jazz, swinging movie music, and other stereo overstimulation. The Retro Cocktail Hour.
Wednesday night at 8 on Radio Catskill.
Forget the seatbelts. Fire up the cocktail shaker.
WJFF Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with national news, community interviews, and your favorite local shows.
Welcome back to the Local Edition on a Monday, and something we do every Monday here on the Local Edition. We check in with Sullivan County, and this week again, we're checking in with John Little, Sullivan County Commissioner of Health and Human Services, because there's a lot happening under his auspices. Two issues that we're following up again on: housing issues in the county, but now also we're going to talk about the 988 crisis lifeline that went into effect nationally. How's that working locally? I spoke to John Little on Friday. John, thank you for once again coming out to our studios for another check-in.
Yeah, always good to share information with the folks that need it.
So, you know, for a while, especially during the pandemic, but even before then, we'd be giving out a phone number if people need help. And it was a long phone number. And now the recent news, it's like national news, that there's a much shorter number that people can dial. What is it and how is it working here in Sullivan County?
Right. So the number is 988. It's a three-digit number. And it's something that folks have been asking for in first responder community for a long time. And it's something that's, you know, it's known to work. It's easy to access. There are a lot of resources out there to help, and they all have their own 10-digit phone number. But 988 is there as the National Suicide Hotline. Our local 988 service is actually run out of Dutchess County, because when the state set them up, they went with organizations that are already accredited to run these centers, which is actually really great news for Sullivan County, because the planning and the work that we had been doing to prepare for having our own additional capability stood up, now we actually don't need it. And so the 988 is in Dutchess is directly connected to Sullivan 911, and it's going to allow us to direct money toward folks that go out into the field, go out into the reaches of the county, and find folks that need help and get them the help face to face. So and 988 out of Dutchess will be connected with our peers and with our supports that we're able to start sending out. So we're pretty excited about the fact that this came along.
If I'm hearing you correctly, this new number is going to dovetail well with infrastructure you're already putting in place and partnerships you're already establishing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We were actually working on bringing our own three-digit number, 311, as they have down in Orange County. We were going to mirror that in Sullivan. And what we're seeing so far is that the 988 system is working well. So when the state set it up, they set up Sullivan, Ulster, and Dutchess in one region.
Okay.
And it works really well. The folks in Dutchess are really experienced with this. They actually are responsible for all the suicide helplines that if you ever see on the bridges over the Hudson, they are the ones that take those calls. So there's a lot of experience there. They've been working these issues for a long time, and they were able to bring in more staff. They already have the capability, so it works really well. They've been in great communications with Melissa Stickle and her team and our community services department. So it's we're pretty excited about how that's going, because it gives us an opportunity to get people actually going out into the community, not just from a call center, but actually visiting people in their homes, which is something that we could really use a lot more of in such a wide open rural county.
Well, that's so I think there's two things I want to know, and I think they're connected, so I'll let you tackle it either way. But there's that question of what happens when someone calls that number. But the other question is, like, who should be calling it and why?
Yeah, so I guess second part first is everyone should know that you don't have to actively be in a crisis to call 988 for help. One of the great things about 988 is if you're a family member and you say, I'm really worried about my son, daughter, friend, whatever, you can call 988 and say, I'm really worried about this person and here's what's going on. And they'll talk through the scenario with you and the situation, and then 988 has the training and the tools to decide, okay, we need to dispatch fire police EMS, or we need to dispatch a peer counselor or a substance use counselor, or whatever the right thing is. You know, those folks are trained when they take those calls to figure out what folks need. And so what we in Sullivan will be able to do is get more specialized responses out to folks. So more than just fire police EMS, but also, you know, some specific mental health counselors, substance use counselors that can help people with their specific problems.
Okay, so now what I'm as I'm listening to you, I'm starting to make the connections here between this news, which just seemed like to me it was a good thing to have, like a suicide prevention hotline nationally, three digits, real easy. But this sounds like this is starting to address any number of issues that people that are first responders, that people that are working with, you know, community organization and keeping people healthy have been saying, that we need more nuanced and specific responses, not just a blanket, you know, call the fire department, call the police. This sounds like this is really juicing up that effort to branch out and have a more nuanced response.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my experience, again, for folks that don't know me, I had a 20-year military career. I've worked, you know, fire, police, first responder issues for a long time, actually before I got into human services. And so to me, this is as much about helping our first responders, helping our police that get put into situations a lot of times where they're not trained to do the stuff that they encounter. And so the more services that we can provide to the community, it's as much a support for our first responders that are putting their lives on the line every day as for the folks that we're getting out to.
Whether it's, you know, the individual who's making the call or on behalf of a family member, as you said, is it the motivation to call, should it be specifically that I am afraid of this person committing suicide, or are there other impetuses, just general, like this person might be headed for some harm or other concerning signals? Like that's, I'm kind of wondering like what, how broad the reasons are to call.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of things I'd say to that. Number one is, as we started working on the potential for 311 in Sullivan, we saw what was going on in Orange County, where with their 311 capability, it was providing that kind of assistance, the specific suicide help, but it also was helping connect people to human services that were, I don't have a house. I don't know what I just got kicked out. I don't know what I'm going to do. And so that person might not be suicidal at that moment, but to lower their risk factors, you would connect them to other services. And again, I'm super excited about all the work that they've done in Dutchess to get ready for this on their own, because when they said, yeah, we're ready to go, and they explained, you know, what they'd been working on, what they've been preparing for, you know, they talked to us about Code Blue. So, you know, hey, we want to know who we can help you with, or who we can connect with to get folks into housing when winter comes. So it was really exciting. So that's important for folks to know that, you know, the service is there. The other thing is, you know, when folks call 911, folks call 911 for non-emergency reasons, you know, and you should always call 911 for emergencies only. But there are people that call these numbers that they're stuck. They don't know what to do, and they're scared.
So this is a better fit if people find themselves in that situation.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, not every emergency calls for fire, police, and EMS, but that doesn't mean your emergency is not an emergency. So that's what this, you know, that's what 988 does, is for folks that are scared, that are, you know, maybe worried about being abused, things like that. You know, this is a vehicle to connect them to the human services that are, you know, maybe we don't call them the first responders, but maybe we should, because they're the kind of people that you want to come out before you put a fireman or a police officer or an EMT's life on the line.
Does some of these responses over the phone? Like sometimes a situation requires somebody arriving in person. Do other situations call for, well, let's get like a counselor on the line or something like that?
Yeah, well, and so those folks that are staffing 988 are trained as counselors. So, you know, the hope is, of course, that they can help them right then and there.
Right.
And then
if not, they can.
Exactly. Additional services can be dispatched from there.
Great. But, you know, back to, and we spoke about this last time that you were in last month, that this desire, this idea of having a 3-1-1, you know, part of that too is just having like informational resource clearinghouse. This is one stop spot. Like, you're new to the area, things come up, where do you go? Does this address enough of what you had in mind for 311? Is there still some of that that's going to need to be tackled?
Well, it's going to be a process that's going to continue to grow because, you know, organizations are going to grow and change anyway. But as we get to know the Dutchess folks and the Dutchess folks get to know us, you know, we're going to be sharing more and more information and hopefully make that capability more robust. And if there are things that they need to refer back to us for assistance with, you know, we want to be able to do that. This is all still pretty new. I mean, 988 just went live the middle of July. So, you know, we're really we're going to be meeting regularly to see, you know, what the statistics are showing us of these calls and where the gaps and needs are. So we'll continue to look at that. But it's a very collaborative process.
Right. Another thing that we spoke about last time we were here was just the issue of housing. Since then, like, we've had news out of the Hudson Valley, you know, the Kingston's trying to tackle housing issues. It seems like it's an issue that as more and more people moved out of the city and moved northwards, we're starting to react to those issues. And I was wondering if you had anything to let folks know, any updates on the housing issue or any advice for us as we begin to look more closely at this issue as we move forward.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to unpack there because, you know, the Kingston issue is significant to all of us because it speaks to the lack of affordable housing inventory that is out there, you know, really nationwide. But we're not waiting for something to come to us in Sullivan. We're going out and we're getting after it. So the things that we've been doing, we have a housing study which is almost complete. We took a lot of public comment through the month of July. Online through our open house, and it's the information is still there. I think the survey is closed, but the information is still there. If folks are interested, it's at sullivanhousingstudy.org, and there'll be a public hearing we're planning for. I believe it's Monday evening, August 22nd. So there'll be more information coming out on that soon. But the idea there is to really collect as much public input as we can, and then feed that back to the towns and villages to inform the policies that they do, so that we can develop smartly. Because the input that we've gotten back so far is folks are concerned about, of course, affordable housing, but how that fits in the context of, you know, the Sullivan Catskills are a tourist area. There's a lot of Airbnbs, and that changes, you know, the shape of the market and what a rental costs for somebody. So we have a lot of folks that have moved up here from the five boroughs since the pandemic. So, you know, there are a lot of different pieces that are moving that we're trying to all make sense of.
And the survey is giving you a better idea of the landscape as you try to do that.
Yeah, we've gotten you know, several hundred responses so far, and we look forward to more in the public sessions that are coming up. So that's been really good. And the other thing, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that, you know, we know that homeless housing has been, emergency housing has been a tremendous problem in the county for a long time. And, you know, we have folks that are in hotels. Those hotels are expensive. And we found ways with partner agencies that we can do that. Number one, cheaper for the taxpayer, while also providing a better service to folks and helping them get into permanent housing quicker. So we actually have been working with different architects, and we have one identified that we'll be bringing to the county legislature later this month. And from that, we're going to have a design to compete for a state grant, which we're pretty confident in our chances. And that will allow us to build hopefully a 20-bed facility somewhere in the county. To take some of that burden off of the hotels, take some of the burden off the taxpayer, and help us provide wraparound services, the mental health, the substance use, and the housing and social services to help people get into stable housing. Because that's the real answer to homelessness, is to actually get somebody in a house that they can stay in.
Right. And then that helps the individuals that need help. And that also further saves taxpayers' monies, because it's more efficient to, you know, hey, while they're here, let's get them into this system. Let's get them this resource or this help.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we want them spending money at the Trading Post on the ShopRite instead of, you know, in the ER and things like that. So, yeah, absolutely.
Great. Hey, well, you've been great talking about all the things we wanted you to come out here and talk about today. But is there anything else that you want to let folks know until the next time that we talk to you?
Oh, it's just very busy times. And, you know, remind everybody to stay safe this summer on the roads and everything else, because I am a volunteer firefighter. We've had a lot of calls lately. So be safe out there and enjoy the rest of the summer.
Thanks for coming out.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jason.
Well, that's going to do it for the local edition news and information, keeping you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I've been your host, Jason Dole, and I'll be back tomorrow evening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The DeBruce in Livingston Manor, New York, an award-winning restaurant and internationally recognized hotel overlooking the Willowemic Valley. TheDeBruce.com. From The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. You're listening to Radio Catskill.